Hello, Dan Page and Kim Ezell joining you again today. Today we're talking about the art of writing content, part two, actually. And part one, when we're talking about writing content, was talking about things like, the relevance of your articles, the tips and the style and the things you have to be able to do and the skills you need to be able to write your blog articles. And today we're really peeling back the layers of the onion a little bit more and talking about the underlying talents and the skills you have to have relative to things called copywriting and headlines. And copywriting, the understanding, the nuances of copywriting and what it is so important because it's what's going to make your blog articles sing.
Well, I can remember a time when I didn't know what that term meant, but yeah, definitely blogging and copywriting are synonymous with just online marketing. But I'm actually going to turn the tables on here, I think, Dan, because as I understand it, you've been copywriting for quite a long time. I'm certainly more of an expert on explaining to someone what copywriting is and how it might impact us on a daily basis.
Sure. I'm happy to do so. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term copywriting, there's a textbook definition that doesn't necessarily apply here. But what's interesting is that we're all affected by copywriting every day in our lives. Whenever you stand in line at the grocery store and you're waiting for the checkout in front of you to kind of get a move forward, and you're looking at the National Enquirer and the Globe, and you're reading these articles, you know, that these headlines on it that says things like, you know, "Boy eats own head," or "Hillary is really Bill Clinton in disguise," or these crazy headlines. That's copywriting. You're a victim of copywriting. Whenever you drive down the road and you see a billboard, you know, that's copywriting. When you listen to the radio or you hear an advertisement, that's copywriting. So copywriting is really just the skill of being able to get people to stand up and listen to what it is that you want to be able to say, to grab their attention and get them to just want to listen to what it is that you have to convey to them. That's ultimately, in its essence, what copywriting is all about. And there's lots That's just probably an unjustified, you know, a simplistic view of copywriting, and there's so much to it. But what we're really going to talk about today is how copywriting applies to blogging and getting your blogging articles read, opened, and driving traffic to your articles and to your client's website. And one of the first things you want to be able to talk about are headlines. A headline is a very, very crucial part of hot copywriting, and Kim's going to jump in and talk about why headlines are so important and why a lot of focus needs to be able to be put just on headlines itself. So, Kim, would you please share your wisdom with us about headlines?
Sure. Just to give you a general overview of why headlines are so important, we need to talk about how it works in the context of your client's business. So when I went to blogging school, my teacher came up with this concept called pillars, and pillars are basically the foundational elements of your client's business. So it's the service or the product that you sell, any ancillary services that will go around it. So what's the foundation of the business that you're going to be blogging for? And then from the pillars, we break that down into a concept that works in the online world called keywords. And a keyword is synonymous with what someone who is searching on the internet would type in as a search term in order to find what it is that this business does. People, obviously, you know, each individual has a different way of putting that in, and there are services that study in depth how keywords are used and what sort of keyword terms are more common than others. And so keywords is an entire business all to itself. Whether or not the individual blogger is going to be doing the keyword searches or whether that's going to be done in-house by an expert that already works for the client is just kind of a matter of preference. So in my experience, oftentimes I'm given the keywords, and I don't actually search them myself. Dan, I guess you do a lot of work with keywords as far as...
Absolutely. Thank you. And We'll be doing a different module here where I'll get on and I'll show you. You'll be able to watch us on your computer exactly where to go out to and find the keywords that might be of greatest interest to your particular audience or your client's audience. So we'll be spending a lot of time on that. And so that's, that will help sort of dovetail into the whole subject of pillars. And we came up with a question for you relative to pillars. So if you could help me understand a little bit more, if you have a pillar, for the term pillar is just a concept or a particular words that your client or your blog is really trying to reach out to and grab the attention of those readers?
Mm-hmm. It's a broader category where it sort of define what demographic of readers on the Internet we might be looking for. So what is the central business that you're in, and then do you do some, you know, ancillary businesses around that? I am in real estate, as I mentioned before, so if I'm working for somebody who, say, has a demographic that appeals to landlords, I might have a pillar of, say, tenant screening and another pillar that has to do with something like eviction services. You don't want a lot of these. You know, you want a limited number, 3, 5, you know, generally. And these are basically the terms that define the sort of audience that we're going to go out and try to capture. And then the keywords then relate to how those people actually find us.
Okay. So if I could jump in then, in the case of your industry, which is, you know, multifamily housing and real estate, and your client is a company that services landlords, they might have a pillar might be, you know, landlord services or tenant screening, because they're coming to your client looking to be able to screen their tenants before they move in, make sure they're not criminals or something like that. So that's an example of a pillar.
Right, and then an example of the keyword would be, what would those landlords enter as a search term if they were looking for something that this particular client might sell or offer as a service? So maybe mm-hmm. they're typing in something like the word credit report. And these keywords then are identified based on how often a group of people uses that same keyword, so they're sort of lumped together. What percentage of people call it a credit report? What percentage of people call it a credit check? And we get this analysis, a very detailed analysis of what the likely terms would be that people would use to try to find your business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes great sense.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, from the keywords, we then incorporate that that internet search, that the marketing type of research that we've done, into the headlines. And so these headlines are basically bait to try to get these people to, you know, to come on to the site. So we need to incorporate our headlines, our keywords into the headlines so that we're getting the right people.
Okay, so if I'm a landlord and I have this new tenant, as an example, since you work in the multi-housing industry, this landlord is going to go out and say, gosh, I need to run a credit check on this new tenant who wants to move in. And so they go to the Internet and they pull up Google and they type in the word credit check. Then if you've written an article that talks about credit checks, and you have a high likelihood of coming up in their search. Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. And if I've written 100 articles about credit checks, then I have even more likelihood of getting into their search. So I'm basically trying to throw some content out into cyberspace and hope that it increases my likelihood of moving up those search engine pages.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah, so the most important thing, I mean, I think it's important to understand that foundation. So the most important thing, I think, at least from the client standpoint, that you're doing with your headline is playing to the search engines. So you're trying to get this article headline published, you're trying to get somebody to pick it up on the search engines so that when somebody puts in those search terms, that article is going to come up. And you're also trying to get up as high as you can in the search engines. There's, again, a whole area of expertise that deals with SEO or search engine optimization. Oftentimes the client will have a dedicated person, in-house that's doing this. But, generally speaking, what works to move up the search engines is to have what they call authentic content, or a blog article that discusses that particular topic. It's not just a machine that's been creating a bunch of keywords that are all linked together you know, like I could just take my keyword and repeat it 1,000 times and publish that on the internet. The search engines don't want that. They're looking for authentic content. Somebody
in fact, they'll penalize you, won't they?
Right. They want it to be intelligent. They want it to actually further that particular topic. And so that's what you're doing with the blog article. And that's a fundamental reason why this headline is so important.
I've seen you do that so successfully. You talk about having 100 articles that talks about credit checks at tennis screening, and you have hundreds of them. And so your articles are extremely highly ranked organically on the search engines because you've done that the right way.
Right, and I don't want to stick my head out as an SEO expert because although I work very closely with that, there are people that are vastly better at this than I am, but some of the things that do work is having a lot of content that stays for a long period of time. So you look at the longevity that the business has been out there, and that can actually help you move up on those pages. So we're trying to become the experts. We're the source that everyone's looking to. Also, when you're looking at search engines, you need to get those keywords out there pretty quickly in your headline. So you don't want to have a headline that's two lines long and it's got a bunch of connecting words in it, but it doesn't have your keywords. So when you're structuring your headlines, you tend to focus on trying to get those words up front. But what I'm suggesting is that you're not going to have a sort of an artistic headline that might read like a movie title or something like that. Your headlines have to be really specific to your industry and to the article that you're pushing through, because that's really what you're doing when you throw it out there, is you're trying to get it picked up. The other very important piece, though, to this is that you're also trying to hook a reader, because readership is a very important thing. It's important for search engine optimization because it shows that you're relevant in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also really important because you want to actually draw this potential customer in and start seeing you as a source, because that's how you're going to sell your services or your products to them. So you're trying to capture the interest of somebody who's out there. So your headlines also have to fit that criteria too.
So it has to tickle their fancy, really grab their curiosity and say, I have to read this article. And once they read the article, then they're exposed to your client's website and all the different offerings they have.
That's right. And there's a third sort of incidental issue that's overlapping here too, and that is that oftentimes when you're doing this sort of email marketing with the blogging, and what I do routinely is also work with email marketing at the same time, where I'm taking my headline as a link to my website, and I'm sending it out as an email to my existing customer list. And when I'm translating that into an email, my headline also needs to grab. It needs to be something that's really compelling for somebody to open.
Mm-hmm. That makes great sense. So they've got to have double duty. One as a term is going to be able to be popular in the search engines and be ranked as high as possible and grab someone's attention to be able to respond. And secondly, if somebody's already on a list that you're sending out an email to, it has that same function, getting them to say, oh, this is an article that I want to read. So they click on it and open up the email and go to your website.
Right, and when we're actually doing the structure in those emails, these same rules are going to come up again, because we need to have something that's going to sound really relevant as what will end up being the subject line, or that's the caption that you see when you open up an email, the RE. Mm-hmm. So we need to make that something that's going to be compelling for our particular base.
Sure, that makes great sense. Can you give us some sort of some nuts and bolts on how to be able to draft really great headlines for a blog article?
Yeah, I've done a lot of experimentation with this, where I've kind of thrown some things out there and spent actually quite a lot of time tracking, what works and what doesn't. And sometimes it's science, and sometimes it was just a matter of doing something that was just very sort of risky and it worked, and so I do it again and I do it again. But I have to say that just to kind of give you an overview, there's basically three types of things that work for me, and they work routinely, they work every time. And so I found myself distilling this down and kind of just doing this every single time. First and foremost, and this is this is not me, this is a very traditional marketing type theory, and that is you have to have some sort of emotional pull, some sort of emotional response in the reader. I would kind of fine-tune that a little bit and say that it should be a positive emotional response, but it needs to be something that's just sort of a surprise, or something that pulls on your heartstrings, you know, like puppies and, you know, apple pie kind of thing. Something that when somebody reads it, they just feel like they have to go on and at least find out what it's about. Another thing that I focus on is what I would call a controversy, something that would make people take sides. And you have to be really careful with this, so I should explain it a bit. I'm not trying to drive people away. I'm just trying to say that something happened, and it might be of great interest because people feel strongly about it on one side or the other. I'm not trying to, you know, say it should be a certain way. I'm just trying to say, look what happened, and this is something that, you know, people just get up in arms about. Like, for example, in the general sense right now, something that's controversial is big government, you know, big government sweeping in and doing something. Somebody doing something that's out of the ordinary. People just are interested in that, and they just kind of want to jump in and, you know, take sides on it. And it's a great way of getting discussion going on the blog.
Sure. So, to some degree, it's almost not necessarily the opposite, but counter to puppies and heartstrings in the sense that it's controversial, but it just grabs your attention because it's so in the news, and it's kind of makes your gut squirm almost just a little bit because it's so controversial.
Right. It's just something that makes you think, well, you know, I have an opinion about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's sort of like getting an emotional appeal, but it's a little bit broader. And the other thing that has actually really worked for me, although this isn't necessarily on everyone's top list when they talk about email marketing or online marketing, but what works really well for me is educational type headlines. So if I let somebody know I'm going to educate them about something, and my particular demographic is really interested in that, so I tend to, you know, I tend to kind of focus on those three areas.
Well, and I'd like to put a little power behind the educational, because I think that's so important, because here you're talking about writing blogs for a client that is servicing a particular audience, and so it's not necessarily shock value going after. This audience are interested in certain things, and so I think some of the finest and high articles you've written with the highest open rates and response rates of those have been really being able to to help your clients and your readers to be able to understand something that they're struggling with.
And I've said it earlier, and I know that in terms of traditional marketing and shock value and really trying to kind of grab people so that you stand out from the crowd, I think in my particular industry, I found that you really kind of need to ratchet that back a bit, because I think people are looking for you to give them something that feels a little bit safer.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. Do you have some examples of you can share with us of some of the successful headlines and approaches to be able to do headlines?
Yeah, sure. I can sort of outline things that have worked really well for me. What I find too that's interesting is that if something works the first time, it's going to work over and over again. So once you sort of find that model and you get a really good response from a readership, you can just keep reworking that same thing. I always thought that if you did it once, you could never do it again because people will get tired of it. And I haven't necessarily found that to be the case.
Doesn't work that way.
Right. But probably number one on my list of what I do, sort of my grab for it first option, is to just have a number. And I actually use a numeral as opposed to spelling out the word. I use the number 3 all the time because it works really well for me. 5 also works really well for me, and I know that 6 is really big in the marketing world, so you know, I see that quite a lot. But 3, 5, or 6, so I just put the numeral 3, and then the word ways or tips or methods or reasons, because these kinds of tip list sorts of headlines work really well for me. So 3 ways to talk to your teenager, you know, 5 tips for baking a cake, that sort of thing. And I just, you know, again, I just use that one over and over again, and it's just always a draw. If that fill-in-the-blank piece of it is something that's a problem that people have been having, what I'm signaling is that I'm going to solve it for them, and I'm going to do it in a really easy way. People like that tip format. They like the fact that it's just going to be easy to read. It's going to be quick. It's going to be laid out in an orderly fashion.
That's right. And you can, I'd like to, if you don't mind, sort of bring this back to what you were just talking about with keywords and pillars. Say, for example, your audience is teenagers and your client's selling something that's, you know, a book about dealing with teenagers. It could be, you know, three ways to talk to your teenager. You can just fill that in. You know, and your client might be a baker. Five tips for baking cakes. You can just constantly pull that in.
Right, or you know, three reasons not to talk to your teenager or something like that.
Right.
You can play this a lot of different ways. If you do get you know, a little bit tired of doing that same format, you can do a similar sort of thing by just inserting the phrase how to, you know, how to do this, how to talk to your teenager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to bake a cake. The how-to, the tip-type format is just very popular.
And there's a reason, because it works.
Right, and it also does track on the search engines. I've had really good luck with that. I think of the website eHow, which does nothing but how-to articles, and they use that same sort of structure.
Mm-hmm.
They always just start with how-to, you know, and fill in the blank, and it works very effectively for them as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, another thing that I've had a lot of success with is sort of hard to describe. I call it the us versus them, because what I'm doing, I'm creating controversy, but I'm using somebody as an example. So something has happened to somebody, and they're our example, and we're going to read about what happened to them and whether it was fair for that to happen to them, and is there anything we can learn from it. I find that people like to, they like to know about their mistakes, but they don't necessarily like to be the one making the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if it's somebody else who's out in the spotlight and they've gotten into some kind of trouble and we can profile that, that's hugely interesting, for just about every demographic. And this is the standard headline that you see on the news all the time. You know, I mean, who can put down a headline when you found out that, you know, somebody, you know, in your hometown had something bad happen and you just get glued to it, because just psychologically we want to see what happened. We want to know if there was, you know, someone to blame, if it was fair, if there was something, you know, that could have been done differently.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the kind of headlines that also tend to generate a lot of discussion.
Sure. So that's a lot of what you're after too.
Right. If I was doing, you know, working with landlords, for example, you know, a landlord sued over, sued for negligence over bed bugs or something like that, those are always going to be, you know, popular. Or if someone's passed a law that seems really unfair, you know, to that particular demographic, I'll profile that, you know, lawmakers do this, and it just use really strong, you know, verbs in there, you know, like sparks and burns and hits, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that will always draw. And then I guess the other thing that's worth bringing up that I use quite a lot is to phrase the headline as a question. And this works really well in generating discussion. So what I'm doing basically is flipping it around and asking the reader, you know, how could this be possible? And I'll, you know, I'll throw that out to them, and they immediately want to go on and share their opinion with it. So you're educating them at the same time, but you're flipping it around. So, you know, how could this be possible? You know, how is this going to turn out? And I phrase it as a question, and it's like a call to action to the readers to come on and sort of answer my question for me.
And that makes sense. And thinking of from the client perspective, a lot of clients are keenly interested in how much time people spend on their site. So to the extent that you can draw someone to the site, we have blogs located, and they're going on, and they're commenting, and they're reading, and they're writing, and they're reading other people's comments, they're spending more time on your site. And those numbers are really important to clients.
That's right, and if you can get somebody all the way down to where they actually comment, that's huge for not only the client, because they've got some interest now. If somebody's motivated to actually take the time to comment, that's a great thing. And getting a lot of comments and a discussion going between the group is a fantastic thing. At the same time, the search engines look at that as well, and they factor that into the rankings of, you know, how relevant your articles are. So, you know, the more people you can draw on, the better. generally speaking, I mean, comments, probably mention this later, sometimes the comments are a little bit negative and, you know, they have to be moderated, or sometimes there are just people with too much time on their hands. But what you're looking for when I'm describing that are just people who are reading the article, they're responding to the article in some way, and they're reaching out to other readers. So that's showing that we've become a source.
And I've seen you just generate some articles that have just had massive comments because you've really been able to create that controversy, that, you know, those differing opinions and getting people on there sharing their thoughts.
Right, and it's interesting, and under this topic of phrasing the headline as a question, some of my best headlines ever as far as open rates and readership and whatnot have been, you know, phrased as a question. And if I can create a little controversy at the same time, then all the better. I mean, one of my best ones ever was this one that read, "The economy is still flailing -WTF," and I put that as a question mark. And I wrote that at a time when I was watching the stock market just tanking one afternoon, and everybody, I think, you know, was sort of clicking onto the news at toward the end of the afternoon, and it just dropped, you know, 100 points at a time, and everybody was so shocked about it. And so I think it really captured that, you know, I can't believe this is happening, sort of controversy, and people came on, and I was, you know, just, I was just flooded with comments. I had quite a lot of interest, and it was one of my biggest hits. Unfortunately, my client wasn't as happy with it as I was, because they didn't like the WTF. They felt that sort of went outside of their
WTF. Why not?
Yeah, yeah. their own comfort level. So, and that's something that you have to, you know, obviously, work with as well on an individual basis. What somebody's comfortable with.
There's two points there. One is that I remember the client came back afterwards and said, you know, I know I had trouble with the WTF, but that was by far the most comments we've ever had on our blog. So
yeah,
you hit a nerve?
I think I hit a nerve, and it was just that, you know, I think, you know, my defense of WTF isn't really seen as profanity so much as it is sort of a texting term, and it's pretty generic. You know, you see it a lot in the, you know, the mainstream news. And I think it was just, you know, I was sort of throwing out this sense of just, you know, I can't believe it, and people were picking up on it.
That's right.
You know, you can do this question format in a lot of different ways. I did another one that was basically, you know, regarding the economy and the housing market, and it's like, you know, is there no end in sight? And phrased that as a question, and that was one of those things, again, where, you know, it's rhetorical, obviously, but, you know, people were coming on and saying, you know, yeah, I know, or, you know, here's what I think is going to happen, and it was an invitation for people to come on and comment.
Right.
I'd like to make a little note about that one, though. I wouldn't want to phrase it, you know, quite like that, is there no end in sight, because you'll notice from that I'm really not getting any keywords in there. And I don't want to say, is there no end in sight for the housing market, because I'm putting my keywords, you know, way in the back of that headline.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do in that case, when I have kind of a longer one like that, is retool it, and I'd put my keywords first. So I would say, you know, housing market, colon, is there no end in sight, you know, with the question mark, and put it that way, so that, you know, I'm still doing the best I can to try to get that up on the search engines.
And I've seen you do that so many times, and there's two points I want to make on that. One, when you talked about people coming on and commenting and sharing their opinion, if I'm the client that's you know, the website owner that's paying a blogger with your expertise to be able to do this, this is exactly what I want, because I'm building a community and rapport with my readers. People are coming back, and they're actually looking forward to that email coming in, and they're coming back to my site, and every time there's a statistic with every single website, every time someone comes back to that website, their likelihood of buying something increases. And if you have things like banner ads and things like that on there, every single one of these things monetizes. So you're building that community and building profitability for the client. And the other point that I wanted to make there is that in relative to your other, I guess it's the art of writing content part one, when we were talking about when you have a good sense of what your audience is and what they're looking for, and here you're talking about the keywords and the pillars, and you know what they want, and then you talked in our other module about just being able to read and watch and listen what's going on around you, what's going around in the world. And that's what you did here. And that example with your WTF headline is that you were watching the stock market tanking, and you sat there and just thought about, how would this affect my audience? What would my audience think about this? and you wrote that headline, it was brilliant. It's because you had your finger on the punch, on the button, rather, of what's happening, what people are going to be interested in hearing. And you almost read their minds, and they just responded en masse to that headline.
Right. I mean, and that's, you know, what I'm getting paid to do. That's really my goal, is to, I'm not only giving value to the existing customers, but I'm trying to cast a net and try to attract, you know, other people on as well. You know, somebody else that might have just been reading that article and then got interested in what it is that we do. So you're always thinking about that unknown reader at the same time. But also, you know, what we're doing with the search engines is what's referred to in the industry as building organic traffic, organic meaning that I'm not paying for it necessarily. You'll notice when you do any sort of search engine search that there's sponsors and, you know, there's different sort of hierarchies as to how people are listed as far as different businesses. Like if I just looked for, you know, bookkeepers in you know, a particular town or something, you know, I'm going to get some sponsored sites that are going to come up first. And those are all something that you have to pay for. So a lot of businesses actually pay for their traffic to their site in the hopes that, you know, they'll get interest and customers will sign up. And so these blogs actually allow you to do that organically, which, you know, can be significantly, you know, cheaper than some of the
Absolutely.
Other ads,
depending. And I know in your... You're not tooting your own horn, but you've had clients that have significantly reduced their pay-per-click budget because you're driving so much traffic through your blog articles.
Right, and that, you know, that's another important aspect to the job.
Absolutely. Well, in regard to headlines, are there any things that you would recommend not to do when writing headlines?
Yeah, I always love questions like that because I have to reveal the things that I've done that haven't worked.
Come on, open up.
But, you know, I mean, you don't know if you're doing a good job until you experiment a bit. And, you know, then people who are listening to this can learn from my experience. There's some things that just basically don't work. But on a positive note, I mean, there are some words that I find that I use all the time, and I guess I should probably start with that. You know, there are some things that just people just always like. The word best. It's always great. So the three best ways to do something is always going to be, you know, great. As long as you actually follow that up by giving them something that's really good information. People also like the word secrets.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use that a lot, incorporate that into headlines, because it's like I'm getting the inside scoop. An expert's secrets, you know, or
tips,
more value.
Strategies, yeah.
Right, yeah, tips, strategies. The word simple plays really well, and again, I think that people like to be, you know, sort of coming into the article thinking that this isn't going to be too taxing for me because I'm taking my break or something like that.
Well, it's interesting to hear you. I apologize for interrupting. It's interesting to hear you say that because one of my copywriting mentors, gods, Dan Kennedy, and he says you always want to, whenever possible, try to integrate fast and easy. Now, we're not talking about people, we're talking about something you're trying to learn. If you can get across to the point that this is really fast and it's simple to do, to your point, and it's easy to do,
right,
that's going to grab their attention.
Yeah, exactly. The word easy is something that I've used. If I were to, you know, count the number of times I've used that in the headline, I'm sure it's, you know, many dozen times. So that sort of thing is just, it's just disarming to the reader. They're like, okay, you know, this is going to be, you know, it's going to fit into the time frame that I have, and this is what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned words like shortcuts. The other thing, too, is to tie it into them directly. So I use the word your, you know, to work with your business quite a lot.
You and your, yep, yours.
Right, and again, that's going to play up more so when we're talking about email. But I just find that people even on the Internet will see that, and it sort of speaks to them directly. But on the other side, on things that you don't want to do, what I find just doesn't work is pointing to people's mistakes. Even the word mistakes sometimes just wreaks fear, and I just don't get the pull on it. It could be that word is just maybe too saturated because people use this all the time in marketing. But I try to be a little bit more subtle when I'm using a word like mistakes or pointing out someone's mistake. I do better when I'm using somebody as an example who got into trouble, you know, back to that, you know, that concept of the headline of somebody was sued or somebody was fined. When it's so, the reader's looking at somebody else that this happened to, they pick up the same point you know, they get the same moral from that story, but it didn't happen to them, and they don't have that connection that it's going to happen to them. So for whatever reason, pointing at mistakes, saying you've probably made a mistake, I think is going too far, and readers just don't seem to like that. And also, the readers don't seem to like the doomsday kind of, you know, shock, like, you know, all is lost. I mean, you can get people who really just get so scared from those that they just think there's just no way to recover. And you don't have a lot of room in a blog to take them from, you know, the world is ending to, you know, have a nice day. You don't have a lot of words there to make that transition. And so I don't think your headlines should start out, you know, too far down that, you know, road to purgatory.
I think that makes sense. It really does. And it's interesting because I've seen you just, you know, shine with headlines. I've seen other times you walking around kicking yourself, you know. it's a lot of it's a learning curve. So that's what you're sharing here, some of the things that have really worked and some of the things you need to be careful of. And one of the things we've discussed a lot is you use the term shallow content. Would you please explain what you mean by that and how that's one of those things you want to avoid at all costs?
Well, I've mentioned before that I love to watch Yahoo as my homepage because they're really, really good at headlines. I get inspiration from the creativity that they come up with. I mean, if you just, you know, just take a look at it at any particular time, and they'll have articles like the 5 best cities to travel to this summer, or, you know, 3 ways to lose weight without really trying, you know.
That's right, 7 recipes for this week or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and you grab it, and then you click on, and then you find that, you know, there aren't 7 recipes. There are actually 2 recipes, and there's no details to them, and you either have to link off the site or there's nothing there. But while you're searching for this article, a bunch of ads are coming up, you know, because that's, you know, their business model, and what they're doing is, you know, selling advertising under these keywords. And so, you know, under the word recipe, you know, these are the people who have bought it. And they did a great job with the headline, but it's like the people who wrote the headlines and the people who wrote the article didn't know each other, and you get this complete disconnect. And if you ever go down and, you know, out of curiosity, read the comments from the readers on, you know, an article like that, and I read comments all the time, just, you know, out of habit, you know, you're going to find in quite a few of these, somebody's going to say, but, you know, where are the 7 recipes? Or, you know, I don't understand why you put this headline with this article. I mean, they'll actually point that out to you, which means that, you know, they were frustrated enough with that they took the time out of their day to type in that comment.
Sure. And that actually dovetails back to your point about, in our previous module about the art of writing content, part one, about being a good reader. That you spend a lot of time reading. And then, secondarily, reading the comments underneath the articles you read. So you know what people are looking for, and when they're pissed off, they're going to tell you. They're going to come down and trash you in the comments.
That's exactly right, and sometimes that's justified because, you know, it's sort of empty. So when I talk about shallowness or hollowness, it's like you can have this great headline, but you do need to follow through with the content. And so you have to have, you know, something there that maybe it's not equally valuable, but it's at least justifiably, you know, valuable. Otherwise,
that's right.
You're going to get readers that are going to sign off.
I know sometimes we have brainstormed about these great headlines and even sort of written them down, and then we have to spend a while. I see you just kind of searching out there, trying to find the you know, that great content that will come behind the headline. Sometimes you have to sit on it for a week or so because you know you have a killer headline. You have to find the content that really makes that headline shine.
Well, and if I was describing to somebody what I'm doing, I'm actually writing headlines, and the content I go out and find in order to match the headline, not the other way around.
Thank you. I think that's brilliant, and not many people write that way. That's Bass Ackwards way a lot of people think, but I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, it's definitely what works best,
right.
You know, for me in this particular business.
Sure. Well, do you have any other words of wisdom you'd like to share relative to headlines or, you know, copywriting?
Well, I guess one other point that I kind of wrote a little sticky to myself here to try to slide in would be that in addition to the headlines, there's also a tool that you can use that referred to as a subheading. And you've seen these, I'm sure, in articles that you've read. It's basically a smaller kind of mini headline that you would use to break up the content in the body of the blog article itself. And these subheadings are helpful for all the same reasons that the headlines are, in that the search engines will often pick those up. And it's another place that you can stick your headlines, your keywords in, other than your headline. So you don't want to keep repeating the same headline. You don't want to be redundant, but you can break it up. So let's say, you know, I did something about three tips to do something, then ahead of each of those three paragraphs or three sentences, I could do three subheadings. So subheading is really simply just it's a bolded, phrase that's going to look like a headline. And it's typically typed in where it's slightly larger font than the rest of the, you know, the body of it. And they can be really effective. I've actually had subheadings that have made it up into, into the search engines rather than the headlines, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, no kidding. Interesting.
But the thing to also be aware of is that where this is an important tool, if you do use the keywords and everything, it doesn't do anything for you if your subheading is just a bunch of words. Like I've seen somebody use this tool where they just put like number one, number two, or tip number one, or tip number two. That sort of thing really doesn't help you. I mean, it's not hurting at all, but that's not what I'm referring to. This would be where you actually tie your keywords in to something that's going to come up in the next immediate topic.
So it's almost like a second headline underneath your primary headline.
That's right. And you can have any number of those depending on the size of your content. And a lot of writers, a lot of bloggers that I see like to do that because it helps them organize their thoughts when they're putting the blog together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know from a copywriting perspective that the whole intent of your headline is to get you to read the subheadline. The whole intent of the subheadline is to get to read the first sentence of your article and all the way down. So if your subhead really adds a lot of power to your headline and gets people to stay on that long until they read the article and really get drawn into it, then it makes a lot of sense to use it.
Right, and I guess the very last thing that I would end on today, Ben, is that to think about it, and maybe when you do your next internet search, you can take a look at this, but think about how this is going to get printed in the search engines if it does get picked up. So oftentimes it's your headline that comes first, and then it might be that hook that you put in at the very beginning of the article that comes afterwards. So, you know, you're forever looking at structuring this so that it appears pretty, you know, if you do get picked up on the search engines, and it does hook someone. So somebody will look at that and say, well, I want to click on that and read just a little bit more.
Absolutely. Rather than a lot of times you'll see an article out there that just has a headline and then some sort of gobbledygook underneath it that's printed on the search engine. It just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't grab you.
Right. Everyone wants compelling content. And
that's right.
It needs to look good. It needs to look intelligent, and it needs to read that way as well.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you, and looking forward to the next module.
All right. See you next time.